Accession number 20456, Real 4.
Brigadier Wilson, Real 4. I think you were saying that while you were on the island, Singapore Island, you were training and that you went off into the jungle.
Yes.
Was the jungle in that area the same as the jungle you've been training in earlier on in India?
No, quite different. Well, basically speaking, well, of course, it's different again nowadays. Basically speaking, Johor was largely rubber and coconut and pineapple. And your rubber plantations were planted in rows of trees like sort of guardsmen on parade. And you got probably a field of fire of 200 yards. But beyond that, you couldn't see them anyway. So to try and hold a line in that, hopeless, because you could be outflanked very easily. In bits, you've got proper jungle. That you had to have special kit to deal with. And, of course, we didn't have it. They do now. There was no question of abseiling down from helicopters into it or getting casualties out by helicopter from it. You found that in patches, particularly alongside the riverbanks. But our job was, as far as Mer Singh and General Loang were concerned, to reconnoiter every possible route inwards from a Japanese force that might or might not have landed there. And that's what we did.
Was there ever any idea that you might try and hold the beach itself and stop them from getting...
Well, we knew there was no way we could have done. They put up the old pillbox and they produced the old Italian anti-tank gun.
Italian anti-tank gun?
Oh, yes, captured in the desert. They'd be all right, stopping landing craft. The beach is enormously long. I mean, they could about flank you any time they liked, which is what they did at Kota Bharu. Kota Bharu, you see, was a very well-defended beach at the beginning of the war, and the Japanese only just got away with it. They had a lot of casualties at Kota Bharu. But to try and hold a long line of beach, as the Germans found out, everyone has found out, is not on. You can't do it.
So what you have to do then is hold the exits or routes inland.
Well, you hold them off initially, yes, and then you hold the road in depth behind.
Yes.
So that they, if they come round, they come up against opposition behind.
Does this mean then that your defence plan consists essentially of a series of roadblocks?
Correct.
In depth.
Correct. Yes.
How would you go about actually laying out or constructing a position to act as a roadblock in Malaya?
It wasn't easy because of the nature of the ground and the sogginess and all the rest of it. But, I mean, it is perfectly possible. I mean, you could dig in on the immediate sides of the road.
Yes.
There's then probably a big monsoon drain.
Yeah.
You could then dig in with these. We're not talking about long trenches. We're talking about rifle pits now.
Yeah.
And that was the way you did it. And if you had no barbed wire, if you were lucky, you put some of that up.
Had the transformation from extended lines of entrenchment to rifle pits occurred in doctrine while you were in India? Had they changed there?
No. No, and of course we had frightful rows. I mean, we arrived in Malaya to find that there was no British Army book about jungle warfare. There was one, actually. Oh, yes. Written in 1916 against John Leto Vorbeck in the jungles of East Africa. Well, totally different. And they talked about surrounding yourself as a zareba of thorns.
This is more about bush rather than jungle.
Well, that was bush, you see.
Yes.
But that was all we had.
So So you're making it up as you went along.
We made it up as we went along. And you see, you've got to go back to all the appreciations. It's Louis Allen's got it very well in his book. The the staffs in Singapore Island had never really got to grips with how on earth they were going to deal with this type of operation. And it was left, you see, the Australians were very successful. But Percival, in 1936, I think, wrote a paper when he was G1 of Malaya, more or less foretelling with pretty good accuracy what would happen.
He'd done a good appreciation of the ground.
Indeed he had. But then you see along come the Royal Air Force and they say, well now, all this is nonsense. If you give us enough aircraft and enough landing ground, we will make quite certain that no Japanese fleet will get anywhere near you. In the long run, that concept was, how can I put it, accepted, which meant the construction of these big airfields. They were very big airfields, but they needed defending. So that then fell a step to defense. And on the day in question, not only did we not have the right numbers of aircraft, but the aircraft we had were not on a par with the aircraft the Japanese were able to throw at us.
The Royal Air Force were assuming air superiority, weren't they, on our side?
Well, they were, but I mean, they wanted 300, if I'm right in saying, they wanted 360 planes.
Yes.
That was a scaled down amount. I think they had 180, of which not all that many were necessarily serviceable. And of those that were serviceable, the types that they had were, by Japanese standards, 10 years behind.
Were you aware of all that at the time when you were in Malaya and trying to...
No, because we were told these Brewster Buffaloes and Denims and all the rest of it are plane for plane, just as good, indeed not better than the Japanese. No one ever told us about a nasty little thing called a Zero until we saw it.
What about Ian Stewart? Did he take a view of these?
Oh yes, yeah, very much so he did. There was an exercise. I went along as his adjutant, and the exercise was an administrative one dealing with how many days worth of supplies should be held at various strategic points throughout Malaya, who would be responsible for them, who would be responsible for distributing them, etc., etc. And this went on for about a week. And very detailed working out. And at the end of it, in the water, various people asked for any questions. And the other steward stood up and he said, look, he said, I'm terribly sorry. We have been working out in great detail supplies for 6 months and a year for, you know, various places. And he said, I think it's a waste of time. I don't believe the whole thing will last 6 months. I believe we will have been totally defeated. What we want to concentrate on is fighting the enemy and not bothering ourselves about, you know, problems of some time.
How were his remarks received?
He was told to shut up and sit down. And everyone knew that his ideas were mad. Oh, yes. Well, you see, the trouble was that behind Malaya was India, and behind India was the War Cabinet and Churchill and so on. And there was a great deal of disinformation about the strength of Singapore that had been passed down the line, in some ways to disinform the Japanese, I suspect. All the business about the guns not be fighting, couldn't fire inland is absolute nonsense. They did fire inland, but what on earth is the use of firing a dirty 15-inch grip brick into a nice sort of swampy land? It'll just sort of get, you know. And what is more, without proper observation, you can't do it.
No point at all unless you can spot the fall of shot.
Spot fall of shot, you see. And so you had all this mass of 15 and 16-inch guns all around the naval base, Takamati, all these places, which splendid had they come by sea, but unfortunately, coming by land, although they shot at things, whether or not they hit them, no one ever knows.
You were saying that when you tried to block a road, you could dig in on either side of the road.
Usually.
On the hard shoulder.
Yes.
Yeah. What could you do beyond the storm there?
Well, once you've sort of got in the actual rubber plantation, you can dig in too. But there was usually a bit of a ditch because the roads had to be built up.
Yes.
You see.
So for runoff.
Yes, suppose, you have runoff water.
Mm. So, what about actually physically blocking the road? What could you do about that?
Well, again, they made sort of concrete blocks.
Yes.
In the hopes of stopping the Japanese medium tanks. Unfortunately, most of them didn't reach their positions in time. Unfortunately, some of them weren't put in position. There was a dearth of anti-tank mines. On Singapore Island myself, all we had for the whole battalion to block the Bukitima Road was 6 mines to block a dual carriage road. I mean, childish nonsense, you see.
You mentioned wire. Did you have plenty of wire?
Yes, but usually at the wrong place.
Oh.
There is.
When you laid out a roadblock, what sort of scale would it be? Would it be a platoon position or something?
It was usually a platoon position, yes. Yeah. Sometimes it could be a company position. Yeah.
Would it normally have all-round defence? Would you have a 3?
You'd try to, yes. Yeah. Sometimes you couldn't achieve that.
That would be lucky.
You see, there was no or very little high ground. You were fighting on the flat. So you didn't get much observation of artillery. You had to sort of shoot by, think, oh, things over there, whatever, you know.
Well, you might be able to estimate direction with the air, but it's rather difficult to estimate range, presumably.
Yes, well, you've got not too bad at it then, I suppose, yeah.
Did you have artillery allocated to support you?
Oh, yes, very much so. Field regiments, there were two Australian field regiments, three field regiments with 18 div. We had 137, 150. I mean, that was the one item where we were better provided than the Japanese, and that was our guns. But difficult was to use them. On 3 occasions, we used them very well. They suffered considerably. But if you're firing sort of blind into the jungle, no matter what predetermined plan, artillery without observation has got an awful lot of its usefulness.
Well, if you can only see 200 metres ahead, then it's rather difficult to use.
Well, exactly.
What would your range be if you talked about jungle as well as rubber? I mean, how far would your line of sight be in jungle?
How far what?
Would your line of sight be in jungle? How far could you see?
Well, 200 yards, you see, that's all.
And could you cut back vegetation to provide clearer fields of fire?
Well, yes, but you try and cut back a rubber plantation and all the trees. That's another thing. Who's going to do it? that time there was the biggest producer of rubber in the world. We were being urged, for goodness sake, please, 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 boys, most rubber possible. Which meant that when the army said to the estates, please, we want coolies to do works on the fences, the estate managers fell at us and said, no, sorry, chums, look, we're, you know, being asked to do this, and it's frightfully important.
Sounds there wasn't really very good civil military coordination.
There wasn't, ma'am.
Who were you reporting to at that time as a brigade? Because you'd been detached from 4th Indian Division. Were you an independent brigade?
We were an independent brigade. We were directly under Malaya command. But when the shooting started, we came under 3rd Indian Corps, which was the corps that held the approaches right from the top down the Great Main Road.
Did you get warning that the Japanese were approaching, you know, when the campaign began?
Oh, certainly. 40 hours.
What did you do in that time?
Hudson of the Royal Air Force spotted the Japanese assault convoy coming around the south of Indochina 48 hours before they landed and was shot at. And he gave a very detailed report of what it's all about. And so we all went to first to re-read it. Next thing that happened was single-winged naval reconnaissance machine? Catalina.
Flying boat.
Yes, flying boat.
Yes.
Catalina was sent out to relieve the Hudson.
Yes.
Nothing more was heard of it. It was shot down. Well, now, this is all 48 hours before the Japanese battle landed.
What happens when you go to first degree readiness? What did that mean?
Well, you man your trenches. You are ready to repel them. The people who weren't, the Cote d'Ivoire was all right. The people who were not were the wretched people who were 11th Division, who were supposed to go into Siam. And the politicos said, watch it, boys. You mustn't go into Siam. It'll infuriate the Siamese and bring them in on the Japanese side. And so they stayed, you know, waiting to go forward. And then at the last minute, it was decided to cancel Matador. And so they were late getting into their trenches. And so by the time the forward units got into their trenches, the Japanese had overrun them.
Very difficult to occupy trenches when the enemy are already in them.
Well, this is it. Of course, you're absolutely soaking wet. Whole thing was an absolute nonsense. But it's difficult. It's all very fine for us to sort of sit back in this room and say, oh, well, they did this and they did that and all the rest of it. But the Siamese did actually, for a very short time, resist the Japanese. It could have made a difference had they come on our side in a big way. It was Foreign Office gamble that went wrong.
What was happening to you at the time then when the Japanese were approaching and were making their landings?
I was away from the battalion. I had been sent to Changi with about 6 others of the regiment. Because the Australians had a lot of very high-grade young characters, and they wanted to form a sort of OCTU. And so we formed an OCTU there. But, in fact, with all my sort of many men, we were actually at Mersing when the balloon went up. And a very nice Australian brigadier said, for God's sake, just the chance we want, you know, kindly take over this sector here. So, I found myself, you know, with about 50 Australians, occupying a bit of beach with a lovely full moon, staring at it, wondering when the Japanese were going to appear over the top. They didn't, not in that sector.
Were these 50 Australians the potential officers?
Oh, yes.
How far had you got with actually training them up?
They were fully trained.
How long?
We just finished the course.
How long was the Octave course?
How long was the course for? 12 weeks, I think. 12, 16 weeks, yes. They were very good.
What had you been teaching them?
Oh, just exactly the same syllabus as the British Octave, which we got at home. Exactly the same. But with jungle, we used to take them out in the jungle. So.
Where had you got that information from? Had you had pamphlets from home?
Oh, yes. All the training pamphlets.
Standard training.
Oh, yes. And all the sort of training pamphlets and all the bits of about advanced weapons and things we were getting from them. That was one unfortunate thing, that a ship coming out from home with very special dispatches to Malaya was caught by a Japanese cruiser, and the captain of the cruiser had the nice to realize what he'd got. He went straight to Imperial Headquarters, and that gave them one tremendous advantage.
They got a lot of intelligence.
They got a lot of intelligence out there, yeah.
How did you have your Australians organised? You had 50 of them. You presumably had enough for two, rather weak platoons.
Yes. So. Well, they only lasted for 48 hours. Quite clearly, I mean, these were young officers. They were immediately commissioned and sent back to their battalions.
Yes. And what did you do?
Went back up to the battalion to be caught by General Heath on the way. And say, look, I want you to do something much more important. Here are possible withdrawal positions. Yeah. I want you to get these organized, get hold of whatever civil labor you can, and get them prepared. Well, civil labor thing was hopeless because they all went away, you know.
Well, they just
well, they'd been bombed out. They didn't want to stick around. But we were able to do quite a certain amount. What we were able to do was to get hold of the gunners, get the artillery plans made, and, you know, it was some use, I think, yes.
Were these locations well chosen?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, the Kampar position was a very good position indeed, where we could really use our artillery. But the trouble was that any good position you held the Japanese up, they came round by sea along the west coast, landed behind you.
So amphibious outflanking was their answer to the...
The what?
Amphibious outflanking.
Oh, yes, outflanking and roadblocking. Totally, exactly.
So you, how long did that take you, the business of looking at these locations? And
well, I probably stayed in each, I can't remember how location I did, location for maybe 4 days to 7 days, campfire a week. And then...
Was come that just you on your own?
No, I had two young staff officers helping me. I'd never seen them before, you know.
So you were responsible for actually making the defence plan?
Yes, I mean, no, we would actually lay the things out and have the maps ready, put as much wire out as we could.
Yes.
In certain cases, have the trenches dug.
Did you manage to get hold of any soldiers to
no.
do any of this work?
No.
So it's all done by civilians where you could actually get hold of them?
Yes. Yes, there were no soldiers to spare.
And then after that?
Well, then after that, the disaster of Slim River occurred when the Japanese broke through 12 Brigade and we were reduced to nothing. And I was got back to the regiment and put in command of what was left of it, which wasn't very much.
What condition was it in, the surviving element?
Well, I mean... you can imagine, shocking, really. It's a fight, but it had lost its whole chain of command, Johnny Nelly. We had to build it up anew.
That must have been extremely difficult, considering the circumstances.
Well, there we are. Well, again, a lot of people, we managed to extract a lot of people from the staff, and so on and so on and so forth. And so by the time it came to the next operation, job we were given, was to hold the inner rag out of the causeway. We had something like 250 Argyles, and immediately after that, they sent the ship's companies of Prince of the Marines of Prince of Wales and Repulse, and so we had very nearly a full battalion.
You had Marine Highlanders.
No, Plymouth Argyles.
Plymouth Argyles.
Plymouth Argyles.
How did they fit in?
Marvellous. Marvellous. No problem whatsoever. They were frightfully good.
How did you get them deployed then for this?
How did we do?
How were they deployed for this last defensive task on the...
Well, we were again, we were back in Tarsal. We were, how can I put it? Again, Command Reserve, this is Hotel 12 Brigade, and early one morning, on the 8th, I think it was, I got this message getting out of bed saying the Japanese had landed, and so we stood the whole bloody lot through, waiting to go and counterattack, and absolutely nothing happened. No orders, not until midday. What went on, I don't know. It was scarcely had a gun firing. There was total chaos. It must have been. Then we moved up, and then we got involved in goings-on up in the northeast corner of the island.
What sort of goings-on?
The what?
What sort of goings-on?
Well, being beaten up by the Japanese, who were pursuing the Australians.
So did you run into them as an encounter?
Yes, but the trouble was that we hadn't enough to force them back along that whole length, and once again the business of envelopment came in. They got round our left flank and our supply route to Singapore.
What was the ground like in that part of the island?
Rubber.
So you were in rubber.
Rubber.
And were you advancing? Were you advancing to contact?
Yes.
To attack them.
Yes.
How were you actually deployed for that advance?
We had sort of two companies. In the front, yes. You know, going to a small hill which was rubber on, and two of the back supporting. But unfortunately, the Japanese had established themselves rather well. And one of the company commanders was a very nice guy called Bobby Aylwin, who was ex-Prince of Wales, Captain of Marines, who was accidentally shot through his left arm. Whereupon, he was carrying a map in his right arm, he put his map over it. Whereupon, my sergeant said, tore the map, said, for Christ's sake, not the map, so it's the only one we've got. there was no way we were going to get anywhere. We couldn't do it. They were by then dug in. So we withdrew, and we held the line down the Bukittima Road, which was successfully for 2 days, and then they bust out with tanks.
Were you dug in on that line?
What?
Were you dug in on that line?
Yes.
Mm. What sort of style of possessions were they? Were they the two-man pits?
Well, it was a bit better than that. But I mean, the trouble was, we had 6 anti-tank mines for the whole of a dirty great road. Yes. We had 2 anti-tank rifles, 2 armored cars. And when you're sort of a Japanese medium tank, will chew this up in 5 seconds flat, which he did. And then they followed by about another 30-odd tanks down the road. Nothing we could do about them.
Did they simply attack in a column of armour?
Yes,
straight down the road?
Yes.
Did that go through the middle of your position?
Yes. And we had absolutely nothing was wrong with them. Nothing.
Was it a purely tank attack, or did they have infantry following?
They had infantry following alongside them, yes.
So they mixed in with the tank?
Yes.
The infantry?
But this was at night.
A night attack? With
yes, tanks. Yes.
Did they do any artillery preparation before?
No, oddly enough, no. No, none. They just came straight through us. No, no, no. Just assault.
Did they?